I'm Phil Pringle, and welcome to the C3 Church Global Podcast. Thanks for joining us today from wherever you are in the world. C3 Church Global is a family of almost 600 churches around the world, and this podcast is all about equipping pastors and leaders to lead healthy, growing, and multiplying churches. We are Christ-centered, Spirit-powered, and Connect-driven. Every week on this podcast, you will find new and uplifting content to strengthen you, equip you, and help you lead others into a relationship with Christ. You'll find a mix of devotionals that build your faith and your relationship with Christ, as well as rich and empowering conversations with leaders and friends in ministry from around the world. We also bring inspiring testimonies and updates from our pastors and churches throughout the C3 movement on the 64 nations that we're present in. Here's this week's podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the C3 Church Global Podcast. Thanks so much for joining us. My name is Steve, and I'm joined today by Rock Murugiki and also Pat Ancliffe, two members of our C3 Global Executive Team. We're going to be having a discussion today on raising finance with a focus in the developing world. So, Rock, Pat, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolute pleasure to be here. So excited to be talking about this particular topic.
It's a great pleasure to be here and talking about this.
Well, C3 is a global movement with churches all around the world. That's a blessing to us, and it makes us culturally rich. And this is a great conversation for us to have in light of that. Let me start with you, Pat. If something is theologically true, it has to be true everywhere. So our theology for giving should hold true across contexts, even in contexts where the economic conditions may be tougher. And even though methodologies may change depending on contexts, the underlying truth must remain constant. From your perspective, what are some of the core theological truths about giving that apply everywhere?
Yeah, this is a really interesting one, Steve, because I think it can be quite easy to think, oh yeah, this applies everywhere, until you see face-to-face the grinding challenge of people who are in really difficult economic circumstances. And for Amanda and I, this was something that we had to tackle way back in the early 90s when we became the lead pastors of C3 Cebu in the Philippines. We had people of all manner of economic situations in the church. And I had to grapple with this. Can I talk to people who are living in a squatter community about giving and giving generously to the Lord, giving to the church, and that we will still see that work for them like we would see it work in situations that are much more developed economically? And I grappled with it and went for it. And so began to, I mean, the Bible is just so full of scripture, wisdom, about giving, about finances, about tithing, and I just went for it. And what we saw was quite extraordinary. We saw people's economic situations changed. We saw them believing God and going into a place of faith and getting jobs, income increasing. And basically, it was just teaching all that the Bible talks about giving. We also taught about tithing. But the nuance on that, that it was tithing from a faith perspective, following the example of Abraham, New Covenant, not because people are under the law. And that was something that we saw that was absolutely extraordinary. Just say one thing. When I was grappling with this, I spoke to another missionary, and he said, Pat, I've had to grapple with this. Let me give you a little booklet. And that little booklet was called I Taught the Dyaks to Tithe. And it was a missionary who taught headhunters in Kalimantan in Indonesia how to tithe just before World War II broke out and they had to leave the island. And he taught them to tithe, thinking, we're not here to support them anymore. Came back after the war and was just astounded at the economic lift that had happened amongst the Dyak tribe. So this is a truth that works everywhere for everyone.
Yeah, that's amazing, Pat. Just a follow-up question. What might be some things that you hear said in some contexts that don't really work or ring true in the developing world?
I think the standouts, and I've found this really sad over the years, is where a pastor will look at the members of their church, look at their poverty and think, I've got to be the breadwinner. They don't teach the members of their church about giving, about tithing, and take the burden on themselves. So effectively what they do is position the members of their church in the, I need a handout position, in the victim chair. And so I've seen that absolutely catastrophic in the way that it's impacted. The second thing that I'd say doesn't work is when people with a good heart and good intent come from a place that is economically developed and just start doing handouts to people, that leaves them in a place where they don't need to develop faith, they don't need to know the Bible, what it says about giving, tithing, and that also is something that's pretty debilitating when that is exercised.
Okay, well, we might circle back around to talk about the handout thing a little later on. Rock, you were born and raised in Uganda. You're the pastor of a thriving multi-site church there. What are some important paradigm shifts that can be empowering for people in the developing world to step up into things like generosity and stewardship?
Precisely. The first shift would be not just focusing on giving and teaching about giving, but looking at the entire process. People cannot give what they don't have. And also, people cannot give what they have not kept. So if you start with give, that can be very hard. You need to start with work. Teach healthy ways of working. And in that process, you teach how to steward, be a good steward. How do you keep a record? And then help people to understand that whatever you get in the harvest is not for consumption. Part of it is seed. And that seed is going to be for the next season. And also help them to know that it's God who causes you to make wealth. So when you give to God, it is actually going to lead you into multiplication. That is the first shift. Many times we've seen excesses of what people call generosity, where people say, just give, and the giving goes to one person. So in some communities, right, people think if you're saying we should give to God, it ends up going to the pastor. So there needs to be a shift on how the offerings are handled. There need to be systems of accountability, internal control systems, and a way of showing the congregation how much was earned and how it was spent. That builds trust and enables them to even want to be more generous. Another shift should be from obligation to worship. There is always a tendency of people saying, this is my harvest, this is what I have, and it belongs to me. I worked so hard to get it, so no one should ask for anything. When you teach and shift their mind, showing them that giving is an act of worship, and it shows that we honor God who gives us strength to make wealth, that is a great shift. Another one would be from dependency to empowerment. In the developing world, there is always the dependency syndrome, where people say, someone should give to me instead of me giving to another person. So what we need to do is to shift the minds from people have to give to me to I need to be empowered for me to give to the others. Like in Africa or in India or wherever the developing world is, people need to understand that the solutions of our world are going to come from our world. And they need to also shift to know that God has given us everything that it takes. God has given us seed. And if we can multiply that, then we can be a blessing even to people that are in our communities and even beyond that. That's my take.
Yeah. Amazing. I love that. To both of you, because you've both been involved in the developing world, could you share some examples of how our churches in the developing world have embraced biblical financial principles and have benefited as a result?
Rock, I reckon the first thing you said then was a real key that I saw completely changing individual lives and then the life of a church. And that is, you can't just teach giving in isolation. It needs to be discipleship, which is holistic, stewardship, work, saving, how to delay gratification, how to save for the next season. And so we saw in the north of Uganda a couple called Vincent and Pascha, and they were farmers, and they were in a community that was actually an internally displaced persons camp. They began to put into practice giving, teaching the church to give, looking at their work and looking at ways that they could do their work in such a way that is more profitable. And I remember 1 year visiting and going to preach at this church. It was C3 Kitcombe Matidi, Little Kitcombe. And as I arrived, I saw a bunch of new houses. And I asked Vincent, who are the houses for? And he said, oh, we built them for the widows in our community. And my natural answer was, because the paradigm usually is, who gave you the money? I said, oh, where'd the money come from? And he says, well, the Lord's blessed our farming. And then we walked in and saw a new generator outside the door. And I said, where'd the generator come from? The Lord blessed our farming. Walked inside, there was a new mixing board and sound set up. And he gave me the same answer. And there was just this wisdom that God had given them to have greater profit. So one of the things they did, for example, is built a great storehouse to put their grain in. So when everyone else was flooding the market and the prices were down, he just kept his grain, and it was a good storehouse so the rats couldn't eat it. And then when the prices went up, sold the grain then, and they just saw their income as a church and income as individuals thrive. So that's one church in a most unlikely place that you would think would prosper, just putting these principles that are absolutely applicable all over the world into practice.
Yeah, amazing. Rock, did you have any ideas on off the top of your head?
Yeah. We are running a C3 global program, that raises entrepreneurs. And it's already going on in East Africa. And we have actually launched it in Southern Africa. So we run it in our churches. It's part of the discipleship program of the church, though it's a distinct program. And we train entrepreneurs. We have a training manual for that. So after training the entrepreneurs, we also start a savings group in the church. So we encourage people to start businesses, and we get mentors for them in these businesses. And then we also encourage them to save. And if they are doing well with their business and they are also saving, they have the opportunity to access seed capital, which we fundraise through C3 Global and through our churches internationally. And this is helping to shift the mindset from hand out to hand up. The challenge of overcoming poverty is massive, and you can't deal with it in one go. It takes time. Mm-hmm. So we are shifting from what the other guys are saying. If you give to the man of God, if I bless you, then you will come out of poverty and become rich. So what we are doing is, it's not just a one-day thing. It's not just the laying on of hands. It's a mindset change. You need to study.
Yes.
You need to learn. You need to be coached, and you need to be mentored. And after that, you need to apply the principles. Applying the right principles over a long period of time is going to help to break the yoke of poverty of our people. And of course, as we teach them how to work, how to save, we are also teaching them how to be generous. And we are seeing a great increase in our tithes and offerings as people bring something and everyone brings something. The churches are getting better.
Steve, could I just say about that? There might be pastors watching this and thinking, that just sounds like it takes so long. How can I do this? But the thing is, because Rocks started, now when I go and visit in East Africa, and you've recently been there yourself, Steve, I will meet people who will tell me about their thriving business, their hairdresser business, their their cement wholesaling business, their whatever, they're now able to buy clothes and uniforms for their kids, school books. They're able to provide for all of their family needs, plus generously give into their church. So you've got to start, but then there will come a time when you will see this beautiful harvest in families' lives in local churches.
Yeah, and it's lasting change as opposed to just the elusive quick fix, which everybody might like. As you mentioned, Pat, I was just with Rock in Ghana, and I was just so impressed. Rock, you spoke in a very pastoral but straightforward way, discouraging the people, amongst other things, from looking for handouts. I wonder if you could just talk about why handouts can actually be disempowering for those in the developing world.
The problem with handouts is they don't end. You can buy a plot of land for someone, they will still be in need for a house. You will buy a house for them, they will still be in need of a car. You will buy a car for them, they will still be in need for fuel. And when they need fuel, they forget the one who bought the land and the one who bought the house. And the cycle continues. They will ask for school fees. So handouts really cripple people, though it seems like I'm helping them and I'm rescuing them, but yet you are crippling them. We have an African proverb that says, it's better for you to teach me how to fish than to give me fish to eat. So it's okay to give me fish at one time, but if you teach me how to fish, actually, I will always have fish for myself. So though it's unpleasant to many people, but the way to go is to provide seed, not just food, because when you provide seed, we are able to multiply wealth and we are able to help the people that are around us.
Amazing. Pat, anything to add there?
Yeah, look, I think there's actually a book out there called When Helping Hurts, which tackles this very area. And I honestly believe and admire the motivation. You can't but want to make a difference. When you see the grinding effect of poverty. Poverty creates a low ceiling. Poverty robs people of opportunity. Poverty causes death that is way earlier than what should be happening. But to be able to, given the way Rock has just described, so that it is empowering, so that it requires responsibility on the side of the recipient, and in the entrepreneur training, Rock outlined that they've got to be willing to learn, receive coaching, listen to the coach, come up with a business plan. If somebody doesn't do all of that, then they do not qualify for the seed capital. And I think sometimes against our compassion, you've got to hold back until the giving is going to be done in an empowering way.
And Steve, right. When people hear about the developing world, they actually think everyone is poor, every church is small, everyone is sick, all of them are orphans. That is not the truth. We actually have thriving churches that you walk into and you would say, my goodness, am I in Sydney or am I in London? Am I in New York City? Great churches.
Right.
But the problem is, when people are not generous, there is always the attitude of individualism and consumption more than community. So people receive handouts and build a massive church, and still they want more. And you don't even look at them looking at the need that is in the neighborhood. So right now, people have a mindset of saying, people coming from the Western world are going to help me. But they don't even look at their rich neighbor in the community or the thriving church in the same community to help them. And that has always been the question. You received help and you've built an amazing church. Why don't you look on to the neighbor that is around you? Why don't you help a neighboring church buy iron sheets? Because you can. So what has happened is people give in these great, incredible churches, but all the wealth goes to one person, like most of our governments. So you are looking at a corrupt government and you are looking at a corrupt church. And if we don't address these things and show people that God has given us enough, we just need someone to boost us up, someone to teach us, and someone to train us to be good stewards, faithful, not to be corrupt. We have a lot of resources, and if we harness them and become generous, we can solve the problem that is in our communities.
Right. Yeah, best fix for local problems are local solutions, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so just coming back to governance, what role does transparency, accountability, good governance play in helping people, helping churches to develop good stewardship habits in their communities? And also just a second question there would be, what might this look like in a context where there's less of a legal requirement for this?
Yeah. I think Rock touched on before the absolute essential nature of trust. People will not give to trust. Will not give to a situation that they don't trust, to a person they don't trust. Mm. And so all these areas that you just described, okay, so transparency, that people can see what is happening to the giving. Accountability, that we said we would give in this area and we're doing what we said. Good governance, that we are not wasting what is coming in. This, you really cannot overstate how important it is. And I'd say to any pastors that are listening now, your church will not give and will remain in poverty whilst you do not have set up good governance and the people are giving to you individually as a pastor. You won't be able to teach them about giving because you will always be thinking that my people only think I'm teaching about giving so that I will increase my own personal income. But if the right structures are set up in a church, the right accountability, then you're able to absolutely go for it in bringing what the Word of God says about tithing and giving and stewardship and saving and investing. I mean, there's so much more than just giving in the Word of God. There's all manner of great wisdom. And you can do that and equip your people and do it without reservation. I guess the challenge that you've alluded to is there will be places where it's difficult to use the normal sort of tools, like a bank account. When you're in the village, you might not have access to that. You might not have access to some of the governance is available in the towns and the cities. But you can still take measures to make it accountable and to make it something which people can look at. For example, making sure that two people are counting the money and they are not related to each other, that is recorded, that people are able to look at the records, that it's kept in a safe place. And so there are always things that you can do. And of course, Rock, this is something that he deals with day in, day out in helping some of the more remote communities to be able to do this well.
So just because you're not legally required to have good governance and accountability and transparency, you'd still be wise to do so.
Absolutely.
Yes, we are the light. We are the light of the world. A city built on a hill cannot be hidden. We need to be the ones the government is looking to. We need to be the ones the community is looking to for standard operation procedures. The finances that come to church don't belong to a man of God. They are public funds. So the best way to help our communities to understand how public funds are used should be starting with the church. We should demonstrate that. And we've seen that in our community. We had one of our buildings in Bwera when it came up. People thought that we built it because it was a donation. And many would come and visit us and say, come on, Rock, help us write a project proposal. Tell us how you built the building. And that was an opportunity for us to show them how we raised finances and what we went through to build that building. And as you tell the stories, it becomes very interesting. I will say, Steve and Pat, that I had a group of elders coming to me suggesting that because of my stories and how we use money, I should contest to be the local area member of parliament. And they wanted to back me up. Well, I said, I'm not a politician. I am a pastor, and I will continue impacting the community by what we do. I would encourage all our pastors to be examples in the community. And when we do it well, people can see, not just people in your church, but the government can see, the police can see, the people around you can see, and that will be a foundation for multiplication. So even if it's not a requirement in the government, you have a requirement from the Bible, you have a requirement from God that you should be accountable and a good steward.
Rock for PM. Hey, Rock, for church leaders in developing contexts who might feel hesitant to teach giving, what would you say to them to encourage them?
I will say, if you don't teach giving, the church is going to be poor and you also won't get a wage. So who wants not to get a wage? And who wants the church to be poor? You want the church to be better. So you need to teach giving. You need to teach faith. You need to teach stewardship. You need to teach work for your people to be better and for you to be better. It's the only way. The only way we will receive provision is through our teaching. And when people are being discipled and their lives are being transformed, we will be better. When we were building our first building in Buera, the one I was talking about, it took a little longer. And times would come where I would feel, I wish a rich friend would come and just build this up. But in the process, God spoke to me and he said, this is not my building. That seems to be so obvious, but it was not obvious at that time. I seemed like we are building the house of God. And when God said, this is not my house, this is your house and the house of your people. It's your shelter. And he said, build my house. And when you build my house, which is the people then will build for themselves a shelter. So as you continue to build the people, teach about giving, teach biblical principles, you will see the lives of people becoming better. And when their finances are better, there will be an overflow in generosity. They will be able to build children's church, to build an auditorium, to buy equipment for themselves. So there's no other way. You need to teach giving.
Amazing. Thank you, Rock. Pat, any closing words?
Yeah, I think just doubling back on what Rock was saying earlier about that holistic teaching. I'm really impressed to the importance of that. And I think it partly is because of Amanda, my wife, and my own experience, that way back when we were brand new married, we went to a full-day Saturday seminar called Your Money Matters. And we went to this day and they taught about giving, but they didn't stop there, talked about work, talked about investing, talked about not going into debt on depreciating items, but it's okay to go into debt on an appreciating item. Talked about not going guarantor for someone else's loan. Now, all these things are really powerfully portrayed in the Bible. Not going for the get-rich-quick scheme. And so we spent this full day just getting wisdom, holistic wisdom for being wise with finances and being a good steward. And if I was to somehow calculate how much wealth has come into our world for each hour that we were at that seminar, it would be an insane return on that investment. And so I just want to say to pastors, and Rock's been saying this very clearly, teach your people. Grapple with what the word says about giving and teach it. Don't hold back. The Apostle Paul did not hold back. He said the Macedonians, even out of their poverty, gave generously. He didn't hold back when people were doing it tough. And teach holistically. Tell people how to work, how to work well as a kingdom person, tell people how to use debt in a wise way, tell people how to access that. And, you know, in places like East Africa, that is something where there's local saving and credit organizations that you can be a part of. And so my exhortation is, don't hold back, Pastor. Equip your people. If you need to do some learning yourself, get online, talk to people, do what you need to do.
Go to a seminar.
I'll give a couple of plugs. There's a crew in the United States called Generis, and they are a resource for pastors, and they put up a lot of stuff on their website for free. And it's good stuff. You can get free apps on budgeting. And they help you how to do a budget, telling your money where it is to go rather than trying to work out where it went at the end of the week. And so all these things, Pastor, you can access it and you can help your people.
Maybe we'll put a link in the show notes. But thank you, everybody, for joining us on the C3 Global podcast. Thank you, Rock and Pat, for your time. And we'll see you next time, C3 Global.
Hey, thanks so much for joining us today. Check out more content on the C3 Church Global Instagram and YouTube page. C3 is a movement of many hundreds of churches around the world, Christ-centered, Spirit-powered, and connect-driven. So wherever you are around the world, I encourage you to find a C3 church near you. See you again soon.